Welcome to Voices and Viewpoints with Denise Franklin. One Piedmont man has a vision for the United States.
If we became the nation that where things work, where we actually invest in our equipment or resources and building pipelines of skilled talent, we would have a competitive advantage.
He also travels around the world helping business leaders and politicians realize they can increase profits by creating a maintenance workforce. Plus, our media critic Mary Dalton is lured into a movie of tangled redemption. Voices and Viewpoints with Denise Franklin is next.
We know more than ever before that we live in a global community with an interrelated economy. My guest travels the world talking about a particular sector of the global workforce, from Washington, D.C. and other cities in the United States, to Italy, to Dubai, and elsewhere. He talks about the maintenance industry, when it's valued, when it's not, and why the world should pay attention. Joel Leonard also writes for a number of publications here and abroad, and in fact received 2 gold awards from the American Society of Business Publication Editors for his articles. He makes his home in Asheboro. Joel Leonard, welcome to Voices and Viewpoints.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Denise. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, your title. I've known you for a while, but when I actually sat down to think about this conversation and how to succinctly describe what you do by way of a title, I had to pause. So let me ask you to do that.
Well, I'm known in the industry as the maintenance evangelist, and that was a title given to me by a professor at the University of Tennessee when he said I gave the first speech on maintenance that he didn't fall asleep in. And so I'm very passionate about these issues and challenges that I see in the workforce that aren't being addressed at the level that they need to. So I've created a network of resources, an online TV show, an online radio program called Skill Radio, online TV shows called SkillTV.net, and also consult with the Department of Labor and the Base Realignment and Closure Regional Task Force, the 11-county region surrounding Fort Bragg. And that's an exciting opportunity because I'm able to basically put my ideas into action.
Maintenance is a very broad category. Mm-hmm. Give us an idea of job descriptions. What are we talking about?
Well, it is a very broad category, and that's why when people say how many maintenance jobs there are out there, it's a very difficult answer to provide. But, I mean, you're looking at all the skilled trades. You're looking at electrical, mechanical, electronic positions. You're looking at welding operations. And the management level, you've got maintenance supervisors. You've got maintenance managers. You've got facility managers. You also have a whole other sector in the economy called reliability engineering. And this is really where they're taking a kind of a unique approach at analyzing things. Maintenance is really fixing things after it's broken. Reliability is actually anticipating the failures and trying to put in processes, measures, and approaches to correct them before they become a failure. And that's why reliability engineering is really truly a growth market.
Now, how do you make a subject like this sexy?
Well, that's why I started writing songs.
No one working in the boiler room. No one working with the tools. How safe does it make you feel? Just how safe does it make you feel?
I mean, everything that we do every day is affected by the performance of machines and equipment and resources. And if it doesn't operate effectively, we literally are at a minimal capacity and at risk. We have literally operated in a reactive mode as a society. We have demeaned this profession on popular television. When you think of the term plumber, you think of a body part that's not exactly flattering. I call it posterior cleavage. And so we don't really think about the intellectual capacity to run these machines, to run the modern equipment and sophistication that's going on in today's world. We've got to really upgrade our level if we're going to really fully take advantage of the economic opportunities available to us. I mean, we have stigmatized the profession to the point where our parents aren't advocating our kids to go down these technical paths. I mean, electricians is a very intellectual, challenging, noble profession, but yet we need 700,000 electricians. 700,000 in the next 10 years, they say. So, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I mean, that's a huge volume of people that we depend on. Well, and they made a movie about horse whisperers. How many people drive horses? You know, I mean, we aren't glorifying the true positions that literally keep our economies going.
Let's talk about the numbers. Do some projections for me in terms of what the occupations are projected to do over the next few years.
Well, when you look at welding, I mean, they're saying that we need 2 million welders in the next 10 years. I mean, that's huge. I mean, we're, again, the average age of the current workforce is 52 years old in the maintenance field. The kids have been told, you know, to go work on a computer or become an American Idol or an athlete. And, you know, we don't have a pipeline of skilled talent. And companies are struggling to find people that are properly trained and developed to do the work. People that can operate programmable logic controllers, CNC routers, electrical, mechanical, and electronic systems. And a lot of these associations are aging out, and a lot of these skill sets literally are walking out the door.
And the truth is that when you're in the middle of an economic downturn, these are the professions, particularly those who own their own businesses, that flourish.
Oh,
because
yeah.
People can't afford to buy new stuff, so they fix what they got. They fix what they have. So you say that these occupations in installation, maintenance, and repair, for example, projected to add 440,000 jobs by 2018?
That's what the Bureau of Labor Statistics stated, yes.
That's amazing. And what are we talking about in terms of an hourly wage?
Well, you know, it depends. Again, I don't know exactly what the Bureau of Labor Statistics put out there, but I've seen jobs, you know, $15 to $25 an hour jobs. The average maintenance worker I see out there is making about $56,000 a year, depending on what part of the country they're at. But, you know, these are good-paying jobs, and they're good, stable portions of our economy, and they're definitely something that we don't fully appreciate and aren't developing the pipeline of talent.
You're listening to Voices and Viewpoints. I'm Denise Franklin. My guest today is Joel Leonard. He lives in Asheboro, North Carolina, but he travels the world talking about the maintenance crisis. And he says it's an issue we all need to pay attention to. Let's talk about your belief when it comes to the maintenance industry. When a company is running well, you say?
Well, when things go well, they say maintenance doesn't exist. They don't even acknowledge its existence.
When it's broken?
They say we don't have it.
When money is involved?
They say that's not necessary.
And when maintenance doesn't exist?
They truly believe that it should.
But by that time.
Just ask Mayor Nagin about those levees that need to be fixed. I mean, you know, there's a lot, that's a clear example, you know, that if as opposed to putting in monies into the investment of promoting the parties, if they would invest it in the pipes and getting the pumping systems on the second and third floor as opposed to on the ground level, they would have been some serious things have been averted. And literally billions of dollars are being spent now because of those inactions.
You're using social media as part of what you do. Who's signing on with you? Who's downloading your information? Who is subscribing to your services?
Well, we have about 50,000 subscribers that subscribe to Skill TV eNews, which is my online video program. And I put out about 3 new videos every 2 weeks. Now, I'm getting government leaders that are subscribing to this now. I'm getting workforce development leaders. I'm getting economic development leaders. And a lot of plant managers, maintenance managers, electrical, mechanical technicians. And they're enjoying this. And something to share with you that's kind of exciting is there's a company that just notified me called Barber Foods up in Portland, Maine. And they have 700 personnel. They have 65 maintenance technicians. And that organization has started something, I call it breakthrough training, Denise. And what they're doing is they literally have installed a monitor in their break room. And they have it, as opposed to tuning in to the latest news or latest sports scores and all that, their workers, when they go on break or when they go to lunch, they're actually looking at training videos of all the different vendors that have come in and trained on the latest equipment. And if they're having problems on a particular piece of equipment, they go back in and replay those. And so all the workers get re-exposed and trying to refine their practices so they can upgrade their performance. And they're utilizing Skill TV videos, the 3 to 5 minute segments that we post up there, to kind of illustrate the national and international potential or issues that are going on here so they can see the magnitude of the problem and realize it's not just their backyard. And it's 24/7.
And PLC training is?
Programmable logic controllers. These are the actual controllers that drive all the different mechanical and electrical systems out there. All the automation systems are being driven by PLCs. If you know how to program a PLC, you've got some serious job skills.
So if I were to broadly define the path that you take as this maintenance evangelist, as someone coined for you, you've got the social media that we just talked about. You have the conferences to which you speak. You have the articles that you write. And the interviews and just the general publicity that you do in terms of education. Are you a one-man band here?
Well, I've got a lot of support resources now that are coming to the table. But, yes, I mean, it's been a lonely battle. Literally, when I first started, I was banging up my head up against the wall. People thought I was a Chicken Little that was going around saying, hey, the world is falling. Nobody saw the evidence. But as the workers are leaving, companies are they're beginning to put some efforts and measures in place. And now it's so gratifying to be a part of that solution, to be able to work with the Department of Labor and the generals in Fort Bragg and all the presidents of the community college system and helping develop strategies and approaches in this program I'm calling the Reliability Vortex, where we're literally taking in infrared thermography and ultrasonic, acoustic ultrasonic systems. Again, some of the reliability programs to be able to teach people how to monitor their equipment, how to assess the problems, and how to set up some reliability initiatives. And putting that in all these different programs in this 11-county region, just saturating it with this kind of knowledge, it can't help but help keep the companies there more productive, keep them running and keeping them there, but also help attract and develop a workforce. And again, they got 6,000 exiting military people coming through Fayetteville. If we can get 1,000 of them to get certified as a certified plant maintenance manager or a certified maintenance reliability professional, that'll make their transition from the military life to the commercial sector so much easier. And so, again, we'll start creating this resource pool in that area, and again, hopefully other parts of the country will start adopting it. And they already are consulting with me. When I went to the Washington State Safety Healthcare Engineering Conference in Yakima, Washington, they're already picking my brain. They're wanting to emulate this over there. Brigham Young's teaching some of my programs in their facility management systems. George Mason's wanting me to contribute. When I went to Europe and spoke at the Euro Maintenance Conference, there were several people that came out of the woodwork and said, I'm now the maintenance evangelist for Belgium. I'm the maintenance evangelist for France. I'm the maintenance evangelist for Italy and Croatia. And it's just so cool that we're now getting a brotherhood of people that are trying to elevate the profession.
But do they write songs?
Well, I haven't heard any other songs yet, but they played my song before the U.S. Senate. They played the song in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's been played at the Leonardo da Vinci Museum of Science and Technology. I mean, it is amazing. And when I go to Australia, they're going to play it there. It's just, and even the guys in Dubai loved it. So.
Well, we're going to take a break and we're going to listen to another version of your song as we do go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what kind of message you have as you go from continent to continent, where the culture is so very different, but your message and your reason for being there is the same. I think that's fascinating. So, you're listening to Voices and Viewpoints. I'm Denise Franklin. My guest today is Joel Leonard, the maintenance evangelist. We're going to stick with that title. We'll be right back.
I need a woman that can make things go, one that knows how DC current flows. I need to find me a maintenance woman, a supermodel or a beautiful queen. An American Idol who thinks she can't sing. I know there's few and far between that can fix my broken hydraulic machine. There's only one good thing for business to do is to have a few women to pull us through. So hey, Mr. Boss Man, won't you find me a maintenance woman? Come on.
Welcome back to Voices and Viewpoints. I'm Denise Franklin. My guest today is Joel Leonard. He lives in Asheboro, and he travels the world talking about a particular sector of the global workforce. From Washington, D.C., to Italy, to Dubai, and elsewhere, he talks about the maintenance industry and why the world should pay attention.
Nobody wants to work in the boiler rooms. Nobody wants to work with the tools they should use. They're taking the easy way out. There's no one left to fix our schools. Maintenance techs are about to retire. Companies eggs will have no one to hire. America needs no more TV idols. Talent shows are rigged in ways. Our building maintenance infrastructure could blow a leak or fade in these days. There's no easy road to getting rich. National treasure going down in the ditch. Working in maintenance
is an honorable field. Gone are the days of Bubba, Skeeter, and Neil. Today you use computers and sophisticated tools, but there's nobody entering our technical schools.
We're also listening to some music that he wrote that he uses at his conferences, and it's also available on his website. What prompted you to write a song about maintenance, though, Joel?
I am not a musician, nor do I ever try to pretend to be. But, however, I was so outraged by the fact that when I attended the Society for Maintenance and Reliability Professional Conference, SMRP, in 2002 in Nashville, and it was October of that year, and we were at this event, and the editor of Maintenance Technology Magazine got up on stage, and it was to the mass group of about 600 people were there. And he says, everybody that's going to retire, please raise your hand. 80 to 90% of the attendees literally raised their hands. That just was so impactful because it was right in front of me. And it was seeing that these people were literally walking out the door and there's not a pipeline. There's not anybody coming up and there's not a future effort underway to build that pipeline. And then we were like, where are we going to find the kids? And we look outside in Nashville, and we walk around the corner, and right in front of us at the Coliseum, there were 5,000 kids that were 15 to 28 years old standing in line. And guess what they were standing in line to do, Denise? Trying to get on American Idol. And so that evening, after consuming a few barley-infused beverages, I got an inspiration, and I was like, you know what, guys, we got to develop a song. I can write articles, I can write white papers, but if we could get it into a musical format, the kids, they stand in line in 30-degree weather to sing songs, maybe we can get them thinking about this. And we've had over 200,000 downloads now. You can get people through music in ways that you could never get them in any other context.
Well, let's take a quick trip around the world and find out what you do indeed say in these different venues, beginning with the United States Senate back in April of 2008. What was your message?
I was the only non-PhD, non-millionaire on this panel that was the workforce briefing put together by the Council on Competitiveness. And the message I drove home is that as we're investing billions of dollars funding these concepts to make them cutting-edge results, at the same time, we got to invest in polishing the technologies that sustain us today, the electrical systems, the pneumatic systems, and the hydraulic systems that are drive our elevators, that drive our equipment, our cars, our vehicles.
What kind of reaction did you get with the senators and congressmen with whom you met, the late Senator Kennedy, Richard Burr from our own state, John Kerry, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee? What kind of reaction? What did they have to say?
Well, at first they were confused, and I had to really explain about this concept of the reliability nation, of trying to, if we became the nation that where things work, where we actually invest in our equipment or resources and building pipelines of skilled talent, we would have a competitive advantage. They were quite perplexed at that because they never thought about maintenance as being a competitive advantage. And I challenged Senator Kennedy. I literally looked at him nose to nose, and I said, why doesn't Harvard and MIT's MBA program teach the value contribution of maintenance? He looked at me like, why should they? And so I had to explain it to him, and I had other people that put it in his kind of language, and he finally got it. I mean, it was neat. It was, and they were going to. This was really sad in the fact that that was 2 weeks before he had a seizure. But a lot of the ideas and concepts that we put forth in this document, I understand through the Council on Competitiveness, have now been implemented and are in the process of being funded through the new Obama administration. So it's quite exciting.
Well, operations and processes, those are subject matters taught in MBA schools. So I wonder if anybody's ever calculated how much money is lost when maintenance is treated as an afterthought as opposed to preventative maintenance.
And something they need to invest more into, because I've seen reports where, you know, you can have like a 60 or 70% increase by doing PMs as opposed to doing emergency maintenance. And Michael Porter, I had a chance to meet him. He's the Harvard MBA guru that everybody looks up to. And he actually started reading my columns and trying to get insight. So it's been a quite humbling experience.
What did you say when you went to Italy?
Well, it was quite an honor. That was the 60th anniversary of the Salvetti Corporation. They invited me after speaking at the Euro Maintenance Conference in Brussels. And they asked me to offer some insight and to challenge their engineers. They had over 200, and they had rented out the Leonardo da Vinci Museum of Science and Technology. And they had everybody, they shipped them in from all over the world for this. And in the Leonardo da Vinci Museum of Science and Technology when I spoke, and I looked up and I pointed at the ceiling above, the fresco paintings above in the Leonardo da Vinci Museum. It was beautiful. I mean, this is 500-year-old art. And they literally took pigments of the paint into the plaster as they put it up, and that's why it's still there. However, they've also had some roof leaks, and they've also had through this old building, this, they've had the water that seeped in and literally has washed away the pigment. And so I challenged them, says, you're investing in nanotechnology and you're investing in all these things. Why can't we put people on the moon, why can't we come up with a ceiling that we can be able to coat the top of that roof to protect these fresco paintings above?
So tell me about Dubai.
Dubai was quite an honor. I was the first American chairman of the Middle East Maintenance Managers Conference, and it was just unbelievable to see the magnitude of growth in buildings. I've never seen so many cranes in all my life. I mean, if you take all of the skyscrapers in New York and you take the hotels of Vegas and you take Disney and double it, you got Dubai. I said, now tell me what your biggest issue is in engineering and maintenance. Getting respect from the worker, getting appreciation for what we do, getting the funding that we do, get the support from corporations. When we have a downturn, not to have the knee-jerk reaction just to cut everything out, and getting a sufficient training for our workforce to get the workforce developed. That's not Dubai issues. They're actually not just U.S. issues. They're international issues. These are issues that are affecting us all.
Well, coming back to the United States, and I do know that you've been to other countries, but recently, grants by the Department of Labor have become an important part of what you're doing. And we touched upon it in Fayetteville at the community colleges, right?
Yeah, what's happening is I've been engaged by the Department of Labor's Workforce Development Grant that's supporting the Base Realignment and Enclosures Regional Task Force. And what they're doing, Denise, is they're consolidating, they're shutting down Fort McPherson and adding a brand new facility onto Fort Bragg. And as they're doing it, they're opening up roads or closing roads or adding school systems or adding in a whole bunch of infrastructure. And they're trying to get a kind of a strategic regional focus. And as they did this, they did a workforce needs analysis, and they uncovered the maintenance crisis. They uncovered that there's a huge portion of their population getting ready to retire. And they're also, they've recognized that North Carolina is ranked 26th in defense contractors. There's lots of opportunity for maintenance and repair and highly skilled jobs available that we could be able, if we had the talent, they could attract more companies to earn those contracts and get those set up in North Carolina. Mm. So they've asked me to develop some strategies, and I created this thing called the Reliability Vortex.
Well, let's talk about where this passion came from, Joel. How does one get started on a path where you're considered to be an evangelist in the area of maintenance?
When I found what I really like and found a problem, I really just took it to heart and realized nobody else is really doing anything about it, and somebody needed to.
So when does the maintenance crisis stop being a crisis?
Well, we're always going to have a certain level of ignorance and apathy towards fixing things, and we're always going to have a transitional program in order to pull future generations to be able to upgrade and take advantage of the latest technologies. During the Eisenhower administration, the gross domestic product, 12%, was dedicated towards infrastructure. Now that's 2%. You know, we've got to really rethink things, what our priorities are in the United States. How many American idols do we really need?
I know you capture what you're talking about now and some other things that we've mentioned in our conversation in your articles that you've written for magazines published and distributed in the United States as well as abroad. And you won those two gold awards from the American Society of Business Publication Editors, and you thought that was a pretty big deal considering the competition, right?
Well, it was, yeah, quite an honor. The people that I beat out, again, I'm Fast Company, Fortune Magazine, and a couple of the people I admire and have studied under the years, they went home with bronze. So
got that competitive streak going. Well, I know you're getting ready to hit the road again. Where to next?
Well, in March, I'm going to be at the National Facility Management and Technology Conference in Baltimore. In April, at the Honeywell User Group Conference in Houston. In May, going to be at the Euro Maintenance Conference. It's a two-year event. It's going to be in Verona, Italy. In June, going to be at the Asset Management Council in Adelaide, Australia, which is right above the Antarctica. And then This fall, going to be in Wisconsin, Las Vegas, and Prague, and then they want me back in Dubai. So.
Wow. My goodness. Again, I've known you for a while, and you have indeed been pushing this issue. And so congratulations on finally being heard. And
thank you.
Safe travels on the road, Joel.
Well, thank you. It's, yeah, if we keep these roads paved and keep the potholes going and maintain, we'll be all right. Get these sinkholes out of there.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This spring, Joel will speak to several groups across the United States. Then he goes abroad to Italy, Australia, the Czech Republic, and again to Dubai. Coming up next, our media critic Mary Dalton reviews A Single Man and Crazy Heart.
There are some interesting films playing in the triad, and our media critic Mary Dalton is talking about two of them with strong leading actors. Hey, Mary.
Hi, Denise.
You know, not to digress, but I keep waiting for your Oscar preview. When is that going to be?
You just have to wait. You just have to wait a couple of more weeks.
And why?
So that it will air right before the Oscars.
Okay.
I have a plan.
Timing.
I have a plan, Denise.
All right. But I guess you could say that in a way, today's conversation is sort of a tease for the Oscars, right?
Yes. Because we are talking about two films featuring nominees for Best Actor.
Should we start with your celebrity crush, Colin Firth?
Don't you tease me. He's one of my celebrity crushes.
Well, now that we've cleared that up.
Okay. Colin Firth gives a wonderful performance as George Falconer, a gay man in Los Angeles in the early 60s who hides his grief when his life partner is killed in a tragic car accident, and he has to because he's closeted at work. This is in the film A Single Man. The movie basically follows George going through the day he plans to be his last. He goes to work, he takes care of business at the bank, he visits with his best friend. These activities are intercut with flashbacks of George's life with his partner Jim before the car crash that killed him 8 months before the film starts.
That kind of sounds rather grim.
Well, you know it is. It's a carefully calibrated character study by first-time director Tom Ford, who was a longtime fashion designer before developing this film. The look of the film is intriguing, but it's, you know, at times it's too self-consciously artificial. I liked A Single Man, but despite Firth's outstanding performance, I just wanted something more.
Okay. How about Crazy Heart? Jeff Bridges is also nominated for an Oscar for his role in this movie.
Well, Crazy Heart is a more satisfying film for me as a whole. It's the type of intimate drama that I admire in general, but I also found it deeply touching.
Really? How so?
Crazy Heart belongs to Jeff Bridges, who plays Bad Blake, an alcoholic country singer who's become his own worst enemy. And Maggie Gyllenhaal plays Jean Craddock, a single mother and journalist who falls in love with Bad. Both Bridges and Gyllenhaal are nominated for Oscars. But, you know, I love this movie beyond the performances and the music, which also snagged an Oscar nomination.
So what is so special about it?
I guess this film moves me because of the way it addresses two main ideas in the story. As you get older, you realize that there aren't as many chances at the important things as you thought there would be. When you're young, it seems that the opportunity for love or professional success or for whatever's most important to you is just right around the corner if you don't have it at that moment. But Crazy Heart's also about redemption. But as important as that is, being redeemed gives you the moment rather than another chance. You could say that being redeemed gives you a chance at another chance if it does come along. This is a lovely, sad movie about squandered time and missed chances and making mistakes, and it's about being ready when another chance comes along.
All right. Thank you very much, Mary.
Thank you, Denise.
And that's this week's Voices and Viewpoints with Denise Franklin. I'm Catherine Mobley, the show's producer and editor. Our theme music was composed by Ovation's Evan Ritchie. If you have feedback about today's program or a suggestion for a guest, then email us at voices@wfu.edu. You've been listening to Voices and Viewpoints, a production of 88.5 WFDD, which is solely responsible for its content.